Welcome in, podcast listeners. I hope all of you are having fantastic Mondays. I hope you guys had good Father's Day, if it applies to you, or you took care of your dads out there across the country. We got a lot to discuss. We'll dive into the LeBron James trade, managing to move Anthony Davis to the Lakers and make the Lakers potentially the favorite to win the title. We'll talk about my trip to the College World Series to see Arkansas play against Florida State. We will also dive into Gary Woodland's big win in the U.S. Open and the U.S. women advancing in the World Cup. All that and more, plus guests with Chris Mannix from Sports Illustrated and Alex Marvez on the NFL, on Baker Mayfield, and on the latest in the Tyreek Hill investigation. All that and more. It's Outkick the Coverage, Monday edition. Hope you enjoy it on Fox Sports Radio.
Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis, live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Live from the Geico Outkick Studios. I hope you guys had a fantastic Father's Day weekend and your Monday is off and rolling already in a good way. We got a lot of stories to get to. There was much that took place over the weekend. I want to start with something I did that was awesome. And we had a crazy ending last night. College World Series going on. And I have never been to Omaha, Nebraska, never watched a College World Series game before. And on Saturday, thanks to Bobby Bones, who does a really popular country morning show, I flew in with him and a couple of his buddies. And so the four of us flew in and went and watched Auburn, Florida State on Saturday and then left after that game. That was awesome. And so I want to give a shout out to Omaha, Nebraska. I'd never been before. Heard about College World Series my entire life. It was an incredible scene, awesome atmosphere. I'll talk about it a little bit later, but I got the chance to do that, so I want to thank Bobby Bones for bringing me along and also tell you that everyone who has been saying for a long time, hey, you got to go check out the College World Series at some point, was right. Just an absolutely phenomenal atmosphere. While I was there, standing in line to get a beer and a pretzel, I look up at the television and see the news that Anthony Davis has officially been traded to the Lakers. So that news breaks, and I don't remember the last time I saw news breaking that I looked up and saw on the television, but that was the case because I wasn't on Twitter in the baseball stadium. It's hard to get a great signal. And so my immediate thoughts were, okay, well, I'm glad that's finally taken place here in advance of Wednesday's NBA draft. And as the story has continued to come out, I think it's a big story, right? I mean, it's a massive story, and I think there are many different arguments you can make about it, but here is what I would tell you from my perspective is the most important aspect of this story. We have talked about on this show the fact that we want to have Jeannie Buss on. Jeannie Buss has not responded to our invitation to come on the show and talk about the status of the Lakers, but I will say this. It was self-evident to anyone who thought about this scenario that there were two options, really, the Lakers had in this offseason. They could either, one, lean into LeBron James and do what he thought was best in order to solve the mess that was the Lakers the last year. And if you're going to lean into 35-year-old, he will turn 35 this year, 35-year-old LeBron James, then you don't necessarily have a lot of options when it comes to the young players on this team, because your attempt to have LeBron James meld with the young Lakers clearly did not work. So trying that again for another year, I think, would have been an unmitigated disaster. Your other option was acknowledge that signing LeBron never really made sense, that it wasn't likely that you were going to contend for a championship, and that you were building after 6 years of awfulness, during which time you've been the worst franchise in the NBA, that you were building towards creating a new young team, and LeBron didn't make sense, and you needed to go get assets the best as you could by trading LeBron James. Those were your two options. Either you make a run for a title by building the team around LeBron James, even if it requires you to mortgage your future, or you trade LeBron James. You can't have something in the squishy middle, right? You got to go one way or the other. So the Lakers made the decision to go in the direction of LeBron James. Once you make the decision to go in the direction of LeBron James, it seems clear to me, if you read the tea leaves, that there were not two superstars that the Lakers could have signed that would have made them immediately contend for a championship. Now, that presumes that Kawhi Leonard is not interested in coming to LA. It also acknowledges that Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant, not ready for a year, it wasn't worth trying to sign one of those guys or both of them, even if they would be willing to come, because then you would have to sit around and wait for another year. Then LeBron James is 36. Also, by the way, they may not have wanted to come, right? So that leaves you with the opportunity maybe to sign Kemba Walker, maybe to sign Jimmy Butler, and we'll see what ends up happening with both of those guys as we go forward. But I don't think anybody out there is like, oh, you know what, LeBron James, Kemba Walker, and Jimmy Butler guarantees you a championship. So they made the decision to sign Anthony Davis. On top of that, by the way, Anthony Davis is younger. What did they have to give up? They had to give up three guys that I think are, to use a term, Jags. Just a guy, right? They're not guys right now that are going to lead you to a primrose path of a championship. You have to give up the number four overall pick, which is something that could turn into a good pick, and two later first-round picks, which if things go well, will not necessarily be very high picks overall. The biggest challenge, I would say, associated with this is, based on when the contract takes place, you can't go get another max guy, and you now have to basically restock the entire roster for around $23 million. I know that all the odds makers immediately adjusted futures and made the Lakers a favorite to win a championship. I don't see it, okay? I understand the Lakers are swinging for the fences and they're trying to win now, and I also understand that in the wake of Kevin Durant's injury and Klay Thompson's injury, things are wide open in the NBA, in the Western Conference in particular. But I'm going to be honest with you, I just don't see LeBron James and Anthony Davis as that good of a combo. I don't. LeBron has historically needed what? Shooters. He's needed guys to get out of the lane and allow him to get to the basket. He has needed the opportunity for everybody else to subsume their game to allow his game to flourish. Anthony Davis is an interior player who has the ability to be a stretch player, but he's inside a lot. And he's not a let LeBron create and I will score kind of guy. So while I understand what the Lakers are doing here, I don't think it's going to be remotely successful in terms of being able to win a championship. I don't think the Lakers should be the favorite. Now, maybe the Lakers with that $23 million-ish will be able to go out and sign a bunch of shooters to surround LeBron James. And as a result, he and Anthony Davis will be able to feed off of each other in a great way. But this, to me, is a best, at best, Band-Aid on a mess. And I think if you break this down, that Rich Paul, who is the agent for both LeBron James and for Anthony Davis, has actually managed to put Anthony Davis in a worse situation than he was in New Orleans. And this is why, in a big way, I have said that I don't agree with the way that this decision was being made, because Anthony Davis and LeBron James don't have the same interests in mind. Anthony Davis is a young guy who has now pegged his future to an old guy, and in the process, he has required the team that he's joining to trade away all of the youth on that roster. LeBron James didn't do what Anthony Davis did. LeBron James waited till he was an unrestricted free agent and then went to the Lakers without requiring them to give up any assets to get him. Anthony Davis could have waited another year, been an unrestricted free agent, then he could have signed with the Lakers if he wanted to, and it would have allowed the Lakers to keep all of their assets. I understand why LeBron wants Anthony Davis. I don't understand why Anthony Davis wants LeBron at all. I think Rich Paul has done a poor job of advising Anthony Davis, because the odds are that Anthony Davis has now locked himself into a team that's not going to be very good for years and years. Now, I know he hasn't signed the extension, but Anthony Davis, to me, probably has put himself into a position where the team may be good for the next 2 years. But we just saw with Kevin Durant and with Klay Thompson, as guys are aging a little bit, we saw last year with LeBron and the groin injury, they start to have issues. Can you imagine if the Lakers had a LeBron James injury that's similar at all to what happened to Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson? Anthony Davis is in a much worse position then than he was with the Pelicans. This thing just doesn't make sense from the perspective of trying to actually get better for the long term as opposed to in the short term. I think in the short term, I'd rather buy stock in the Lakers than the Pelicans. I think if you go over 2 years, the Pelicans are in infinitely better shape than the Lakers, which is why I don't think it made sense at all for Anthony Davis to make this move. So I think, I know in this immediate aftermath era where everything you have to either agree is great for one side and awful for the other, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think the long range for the Pelicans is much better than the long range for the Lakers. And I think the Lakers have rolled the dice that a gamble, which I don't believe is going to pan out with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, is actually going to pan out. I also don't like the fact, and I think this is hugely significant and hasn't received enough attention, I don't like the fact that the Lakers have cost themselves substantial salary cap room by making this deal before July 30th. Around, what, $8 or $9 million additionally that they could have been able to spend? They don't have the money to give somebody like Kyrie Irving a max deal now. And so they're not going to be able to get a big three. They're going to have two guys, and then they're going to have to try to supplement them by pairing contracts, mid-range contracts around them. I'm just not that optimistic on this deal. I really am not. I think the Lakers have given up way too many assets for Anthony Davis. But again, I think the Lakers ultimately came down with a choice. Either we build around LeBron and try to win right now, even if it sabotages our future, or we move LeBron and go ahead and acknowledge that we have a youth-based team and we need to build around them. So we're going to unpack this a lot. We got a bunch of Laker fans on the show. I'll bring them in for the next segment and we will debate and discuss. That is a major story that happened while I was at the College World Series in Omaha. The other two major stories, first of all, like on Father's Day, I hope you guys are having a good day. It started off with the U.S. women punching their ticket into the knockout stage of the Women's World Cup. They're one of the final 16 teams. They played Chile. This is what it sounded like when the first goal was scored.
Dahlkemper floats one up. It didn't go to press. Blasted! What a goal for the U.S. Carly Lloyd, a record goal.
That was Carly Lloyd with one of her two goals on the day. The U.S. goes on to only win 3-0. She made fun of the criticism of the U.S. women's team by doing a sarcastic golf clap. After her first goal, she went on to score two, and the U.S. women will now play Sweden on Thursday. They're playing to either be the one or the two advancing out of their group. That game is at 2 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. But again, the big story is the U.S. has already advanced into the knockout stage. They'll be in the Sweet 16 of the U.S. Women's World Cup, for lack of a better way to describe it. Finally, yesterday, if you were watching the U.S. Open, this thing ended in prime time. I absolutely loved everything about the U.S. Open in prime time. I loved it taking place at Pebble Beach Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. If you wanted to kick back as the sun was going down, maybe put something on the grill, Father's Day, open up a beer, kick back and see what was going to happen. Brooks Koepka and Gary Woodland down the stretch, dueling back and forth. And Gary Woodland, a guy that frankly I didn't know. I understand some people on Twitter were like, how did you not know this guy? I wouldn't have been able to pull him out of a lineup. He is not a golfer who's ever won a major before, not somebody that I was very familiar with. But he ended it in spectacular fashion on the 18th. He didn't tiptoe up to the title. He drained a long birdie putt to win this tournament by 3 strokes. This is what that sounded like.
There's his good friends behind the green. Waiting for Gary Woodland to try to finish this off.
Got it! Gary Woodland has won the U.S. Open.
Outstanding win there. It's always great on the U.S. Open Father's Day to have a way to end Father's Day, particularly now, like I said, when it's on the West Coast. I thought that was an amazing 4 days. Lots of fun to watch. And Gary Woodland is the winner. All right, when we come back, let me give you a roadmap of where we're headed on Monday's show here. In hour two, Chris Mannix, Sports Illustrated's NBA expert, is going to join us, and he will break down all of the news surrounding LeBron. And frankly, the fact that there may not be that much drama now until late October, early November in the NBA, because it appears that there's not going to be a lot of movement, at least right now, in NBA free agency. Anthony Davis, probably the biggest movement overall that we will see in the offseason. We'll ask him what he thinks about that trade, who won, who lost. Is there any kind of way that he sees an Anthony Davis and LeBron James pairing leading to a championship? Should they be favored as the number one team to win a title in the NBA, which is what odds makers are saying? Hour three, Alex Marvez will join us. Lots of drama we can always dive into in the world of the NFL. But up next, we got a bunch of Laker homers on this show. We will unpack what exactly happened with Anthony Davis and LeBron James and what we expect going forward. Was it a good deal? Was it a bad deal? What will be the impact? This is OutKick. Appreciate you spending your Monday morning with us. Happy belated Father's Day to everyone out there. Hope you guys had a great Sunday. Hope you're ready for the start of the week, because we certainly are. We're off and running. This is OutKick on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of OutKick, the coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Welcome back, Geico OutKick Studios. Now that the luster has begun to wear off. I mean, it happened on Saturday afternoon that the news came down about this trade. All of the details have continued to come out. And I understand that they immediately made the Lakers the favorite to win the title. We'll see what else happens in free agency. Doesn't seem like there's going to be that much drama. Most likely it appears that Kawhi will stay in Toronto, although we'll see what happens there. I think most likely it's going to be that Durant and Klay Thompson both stay in the Warriors and begin to rehab their injuries. Who really cares where Jimmy Butler, Kemba Walker, D'Angelo Russell, those guys end up going, because I don't think they really strongly change the trajectory of any team and guarantee a championship. So I don't think there's really going to be that much movement. I think probably Anthony Davis to the Lakers is going to be the biggest offseason move, and it's already happened. So let me bring in the crew. As details have continued to come out, in particular what I think is the biggest detail, which is the Lakers can't afford now another max contract because of the way this deal went down. Do you believe that the Lakers will be able to build a championship team this year around LeBron and Anthony Davis, Danny G?
I hope so. The whole city here has been smiling since Saturday. And like you said, the newness is going to wear off and going to have to push some pencils and figure out all the numbers and spot up three-pointers, though. That's what the Lakers are going to need. Obviously, you don't need max deals to get guys like that, Clay. So I think they can sign, say, J.J. Redick,
but
Trevor Ariza.
Let me cut you off here in a second. We'll talk about that. But when this deal initially came down, the immediate response was, okay, the Lakers now can go get another max contract guy, right? That was the initial response before people started putting pen to paper and doing all the math here. And to me, the initial response was wrong, right? Like, now they can't do that. Because the first thing you heard was, oh, maybe Kyrie Irving is going to come back and join the Lakers now. And it seems like he's going to go somewhere in New York. And then you would have had a really, really strong trio, right? And that was the initial expectation. Now I think it seems pretty clear that the Lakers were rushed to get this done, that they had to give, I think, the Pelicans everything that the Pelicans wanted, maybe with the exception of Kyle Kuzma. But what the Pelicans ended up getting was a pretty, pretty big price for Anthony Davis leaving. And we won't know that full price until we see what these later draft picks end up being and who they get for them and everything else. But I think it's going to be harder to build a championship team without at least the possibility of getting that third max contract guy.
We'll see about that. I think Kyle Kuzma is being underestimated a little bit because he could develop into that third star for the Lakers. So it's a big exception that they were able to not give him up. And to pat ourselves on the back on this show, since Radio Row in Atlanta, our first reaction when the rumors came down, or not just rumors, but Rich Paul and Clutch let it be known that Anthony Davis wanted that trade, you predicted that they would wait for the Celtics offer the next season, which is now. And I said, as long as the Lakers didn't give up Kuzma, it would be a win for them to get Anthony Davis, because Kuzma is the best youngster that the Lakers had in a lot of Laker fans' opinions. So here on TV and radio in Los Angeles over the weekend, Laker fans were celebrating the fact that Kuzma is still on the team. If he can contribute like a third star on a team, he's capable of putting up 20 points a game. All right, so if he's the third guy and they're able to put some nice spot-up shooters on that team, then they got something. They can at least go deep into the playoffs.
Now, the talk is that Anthony Davis is going to re-up, but he hasn't done it yet.
Right, well, so he's going to wait to get that max money next season.
Right, but we'll see. I mean, in theory, I mean, things could really go awry, and Anthony Davis could still be an unrestricted free agent. That would be an incredible move. And the Lakers potentially would then be in an unbelievable position, but that's at least worth putting out there. He's not committed long-term, guaranteed. When you saw this news, Dub, what was your immediate reaction?
Well, I wasn't necessarily surprised because Vegas seemed to have known, and I agree with Danny G. I think it's a win-win for both sides. And another thing on Kuzma, he's not even getting paid $2 million next year, so that's huge for the Lakers in 2019 and 2020 because he was such a late draft pick.
All right, sorry, I cut you off too, Danny G. Who would you sign? Like, who are the shooters that you would sign? Because it is self-evident for anybody out there that the Lakers need some more offensive firepower. And, you know, what they tried to do in year one was surround LeBron and that young Lakers team with a lot of veteran guys who didn't cost necessarily a ton and had one-year kind of contracts so they would have flexibility going into this offseason. Who is out there right now that you think is gettable based on the dollars that the Lakers have?
Well, and before I list off a couple guys that are available, you were talking about Anthony Davis's shooting. But remember, Clay, he's not Giannis. He does have a shot.
Right, but he's not going to stand outside at the three-point line.
No, he's not. But I saw an interesting stat. Off of catch-and-shoot threes, he shoots 38%.
Okay.
From the three-point line.
Of all the people, you're not going to pay a guy max contract to get out of the way and allow LeBron James to develop inside and then kick out to him. Right.
I agree with that. I'm just saying he's got an overall good game. I mean,
right.
He's not just an in-the-lane dude like Giannis.
All right, but who is the best big guy that LeBron James has ever played with in his entire career?
K-Love.
Probably. Yeah, and he's clearly not. I mean, the criticism that he got all the time was he's a big man who played like a shooting guard, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that was not to say that Kevin Love couldn't go inside. And I guess you could say Chris Bosh. It was not like Chris Bosh was a great, outside shooter, but Chris Bosh is nowhere near a similar player to Anthony Davis.
Yeah, they're going to need to get some 3-point specialists. I would love to see J.J. Redick in a Lakers uniform. I've always wanted him to play for the Lakers. He was a longtime Clipper, of course. Trevor Ariza, who won a championship before the Lakers, he would be a good signing. And Danny Green, I think, would be a good signing for the Lakers.
All right, so back to you, Dub. Do you think the Lakers should be the favorite to win the NBA title next year?
I don't, but I do think they should be in the top four conversation. There's guys out there that can get the ball in the hole from outside.
What I would say here is, strategically, if you are an NBA team, you've got the opportunity now with these free agents that are out there to try and drive up the price for the Lakers, because the Lakers don't have that much money, right? So you want to drive up the price so much that maybe if you're competing for a shooter yourself, you end up getting one of these guys, but you keep the Lakers from getting multiple of these guys, particularly if you're a Western Conference team. That's what I'd be thinking about right now from a game theory perspective. It's not only what the Lakers are able to sign, but what price they get guys at, and they don't have that much flexibility, and they got to sign a lot of guys. How many guys are right now on this Laker team? What do they have? They got at least four spots, whatever the math is, to fill up.
Yeah.
Right now. So you're going to have to get a lot of guys. And a lot of those guys aren't going to cost that much. But if you're going to try to get guys that other people want, that could turn into a competitive business. What about you, Eddie Garcia? Should the Lakers be favored?
No, I don't think so. But
yeah.
There's certainly, look, the overall opinion here, I think, is finally something positive after months and months of just joke after joke after embarrassment.
And Magic Johnson, by the way, congratulating Jeannie Buss on the trade
and
refusing to acknowledge. Yeah. Did he mention Rob Pelinka?
He did later. After his Jeannie tweet, he then tweeted a congratulations to Pelinka.
Okay, so after everybody was ripping him for giving Jeannie Buss credit for the trade, he came back over the top with another one. Okay, I hadn't seen that. All right, fortunately, I haven't yet stooped to the level of following Magic Johnson and his insanely...
all his creative, original tweets.
The most boilerplate, like, expected... whatever the most consensus opinion is, Magic Johnson is going to tweet it out. So, Danny, so Eddie Garcia, so you are saying, I'm with you, actually. I don't think the Lakers should be favored right here. And there's still a lot of movement and everything else that can happen. But I'm just not sold on the Anthony Davis and LeBron James pairing, in particular with everybody else that they're going to be able to surround them with. And also with, again, LeBron has never had a significant injury. When you watch what happened to Kevin Durant, you watch what happened to Klay Thompson, and you think about the groin issue that he had last year and the fact that he's going to be 35, I still believe that you got to be concerned if you're the Lakers that you could have a Kobe Bryant-type situation when you just look at all the mileage that LeBron has put on his body over the years. At some point, it's remarkable that he's never had a really significant injury. At some point, particularly when you get on the back couple of years of your career, I think it'll end up happening for LeBron too. But let's circle back around. So, Eddie Garcia, you don't think they should be favored?
No, I don't. I think it's a great positive step, and again, it's something for them to finally be positive about, but let's not get too far ahead of ourselves.
All right, what about you, Roberto?
I don't think they should be favored, but I think they should be in the top five. And another shooter they can get this offseason is Chris Middleton. Another thing interesting about the trade is some say the Lakers gave up too much. These haters that are saying that are the same ones that said that the Lakers' young core was a bunch of garbage. So which one is it? Was the Lakers' young core a bunch of garbage, or did they give up too much?
Well, I think the three draft picks are what a lot of people would point to and say that's – we'll see what value the Pelicans can end up getting out of those three draft picks, and we don't even know right now because it's kind of to be determined where exactly those draft picks will go. I think if the Lakers roll the dice and they're as good as they anticipate, then those draft picks will not be that high of picks, right? You might end up with 27, 28s on those draft picks. And by and large, historically, you don't get great players in the NBA late in the first round. Not to say you can't get one. Not to say you can't end up finding a diamond in the rough, finding a guy that pans out in a big way. But usually, you have to have a lottery pick to end up with a really good player in the first round in the NBA. And even then, there's a decent chance that the players are just okay and don't pan out as being great. So I think if you're criticizing things, that's probably where you go.
Another thing is that people are saying, oh, the Lakers could have just waited until next season and Anthony Davis said he was going to sign with the Lakers anyways. But we've seen in the past where they said, oh, Kevin Love's going to end up being a Laker, and that never happened. Paul George is going to be a Laker. That never happened. You know, he could have gotten traded to the Celtics and been happy there, had a good situation there, and then next thing you know, he ends up staying with the Celtics. I think the Lakers had to act now.
My criticism on Anthony Davis and his representation by Rich Paul is that he's doing something LeBron has never done. That is, make the team that he's being traded to give up assets to get him. You notice what LeBron James did when he joined the Lakers. He went as an unrestricted free agent. You notice what LeBron James did when he went to go join the Miami Heat. He went as an unrestricted free agent. You know what LeBron James did when he went to Cleveland? He went as an unrestricted free agent. LeBron James basically never has required the team that's bringing him in to trade and give up all their assets in order for him to join there. Anthony Davis could have waited a year, could have played with a good young core down in New Orleans, could have potentially waited until the trade deadline this year and been able to go to a team that's definitely contending for a championship if he wanted to be traded. Instead, he went to a team and made them give up a lot of good young assets in order for him to go there. I understand if he was an older player why it might make sense, but he's a younger guy, and I just don't see the long-range future of the Lakers. Yes, they might be good enough to contend in the next couple of years, but then LeBron's gone, and how are you going to build this team back up around Anthony Davis given the fact that you're giving away all these draft picks? That's where I think Rich Paul did a poor job of managing both LeBron James and Anthony Davis. because it makes sense for LeBron James for Anthony Davis to come to the Lakers based on LeBron James's age. He doesn't have that many more years to contend for a title. For Anthony Davis, I don't think it makes sense at all. And it appears that the Pelicans were able to extract a substantial offer, particularly given the fact that the Celtics were not willing to give up Jason Tatum in order to get Anthony Davis as a potential rental in Boston. And given that scenario, it doesn't seem like there were that many suitors at a high level for Anthony Davis. So we will see what ends up happening. We'll continue to break this down. And when we come back, O.J. Simpson has joined Twitter, and he put out a video on Father's Day that you are not going to believe. What did he say? I'll tell you next on OutKick.
This is OutKick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back, Geico OutKick Studios. Clay Travis here, Monday edition. Father's Day weekend just happened on Sunday. And one of the wild things that happened over the course of the weekend was O.J. Simpson decided that near the 25th anniversary of the double murder of Nicole Simpson, his ex-wife, and Ronald Goldman, he should go ahead and join Twitter so he could tell his side of several different stories. What side of stories did he have to share? Well, he did like three different clips over the weekend, and the first one included the announcement that he was joining Twitter, and it sounded a little bit something like this.
Hey, Twitter world, this is yours truly. Now, coming soon to Twitter, you'll get to read all my thoughts and opinions on just about everything. Now, there's a lot of fake OJ accounts out there, so this one, at the real OJ32, is the only official one. So this should be a lot of fun. I got a little getting even to do. So God bless. Take care.
O.J. Simpson says he has a little getting even to do. And you're like, oh, my God. What? I guess he's still he's given up the quest to find the true killers. And he is now going to get on to Twitter. The responses to this were out of this world, if you just read the mentions in response to O.J. Simpson. I genuinely wonder if he's reading the mentions or who is posting these videos for him and everything else. But so that's the introductory video he put up on Saturday. And then on Sunday, Father's Day, he decides it's important for him to address the question of whether he had any relationship with Kris Jenner and whether or not he is Khloe Kardashian's dad on Father's Day. I swear to God, this is what O.J. Simpson puts up. Here it is.
Bob Kardashian, he's like a brother to me. He's a great guy. He met and married Kris, and they really had a terrific time together when they were together. Unfortunately, that ended. But never, and I want to stress, never in any way, shape, or form had I ever had any interest in Kris romantically or sexually, and I never got any indication that she had any interest in me. So all of these stories are just bogus, bad, you know, tasteless. Khloe, like all the girls I'm very proud of, just like I know Bob would be if he was here, but the simple facts of the matter is she's not mine. Now, one of the people who's spreading this rumor is a guy that the media loves to say is my manager.
O.J. Simpson making the decision to go on Father's Day and say, I'm not Khloe Kardashian's dad, is, and if you're not familiar out there, there had been the rumor. If you look at the Kardashian sisters, and I know far too much about the Kardashian sisters, Kim and Kourtney don't really look anything like Khloe. Khloe looks like a linebacker compared to them. She's big. She's strong. She's like physically dominant. And then Kim and Kourtney are both very petite. And so the rumor had been, you know who the real father of Khloe Kardashian is? It's O.J. Simpson. So O.J. decides on Father's Day, 25 years after he commits a double murder, it's time for him to start clearing up some misconceptions out there, and he puts out a video saying he's not actually Khloe Kardashian's dad. So I am in disbelief. I mean, sometimes I see Twitter, and I think to myself, I can't believe that this website is free because of what is said on there, whether it's the president of the United States, or whether it's O.J. Simpson now, whoever it is, people get on Twitter and say, and maybe it's me, maybe you guys are like, I can't believe the stuff that Clay Travis says on Twitter. People get on Twitter and immediately say all sorts of craziness. But O.J. Simpson now doing videos, and the first misconception that he wants to clear up on Father's Day is his potential relationship with Kris Jenner and the fact that he's not actually Khloe Kardashian's dad. Did you guys read the comments to OJ's tweets, Danny G? Did you read some of these?
Yes.
I mean,
this account's going to be killer. Oh my God, I'm glad OJ's taking a stab at this Twitter thing. The comments are the best part of all of this.
Oh, a lot of dad jokes in the comments. Yeah. And I can't imagine what OJ's end game is here. But can we put in an official request? Has OJ ever done sports talk radio?
You know, he has, but on his own terms. In other words, he wouldn't answer the questions that the host was asking, so people stopped requesting him.
Well, I mean, can we request him?
Yeah.
I mean, who would we request? You put in a request and see if we can get OJ. If OJ's now...
I'll just go through his manager.
All right, put in a request and see if OJ wants to come on with us, and we'll talk to OJ. I mean, in all honesty, like this... I think it's crazy that he has joined social media, but it's now been 25 years since the murder case. And I mean, again, the fact that he would join and say he wants to clear up some things and basically tell his side of the story. And then his side of the story is I'm not Khloe Kardashian's dad is, again, evidence of why this thing should be you should have to pay to join Twitter in some way. All right. When we come back. Roadmap for the next 2 hours. Chris Mannix is going to join us from Sports Illustrated, and we will break down everything surrounding the Anthony Davis trade at the start of, in the second segment of hour two. We are also going to be joined by Alex Marvez in hour three, and we'll dive into everything that has to go on in the NFL, including the latest flare-up with the Cleveland Browns, where Baker Mayfield may have stepped into it by continuing to comment on everything. Baker Mayfield, by the way, who has blocked me on Twitter. I don't know if that's like friendly fire and I'm just getting wiped out because I work at Fox Sports Radio, but I can't even see what Baker Mayfield's tweeting from one day to the next because for some reason he's decided to block me out. When we come back to start off hour two, though, big win for Gary Woodland in the U.S. Open and the U.S. women advance to the round of 16, even though they still have one game left. We will dive into both those stories. And I'll talk a little bit more about my trip to the College World Series in Omaha and the experience there with that going on for the next couple of weeks. Really, really cool event. And it was awesome to be able to check it out for the first time in person. They do a whale of a job putting on that event in Omaha. That is where we are headed. Lots to get to still. Two more hours of fun. This is Outkick the Coverage. Appreciate you spending your Monday morning with us. Again, belated thanks to all the fathers out there. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome live into the Geico Outkick Studios. 300-plus affiliates out there in all 50 states. Thank you guys very much. Whether it is satellite radio, Sirius Channel 218, XM Channel 202, and the podcast, which continues to grow like crazy. By the way, make sure you download our new Wins and Losses podcast. We have had three episodes up so far. Jason Whitlock, Shannon Terry, who founded Rivals in 24/7 Sports, and went up last week, Greg Sankey, who is the commissioner of the SEC. Today, we are interviewing Mike Leach. So that is scheduled to take place today, later in the afternoon, or by early tomorrow morning. You'll be able to hear a podcast-exclusive interview with Washington State head coach Mike Leach. So all of that is rolling in addition to everything else that we do. The Lock It In television show is back on here Monday. Should have a lot of fun discussing the odds with the Lakers now having Anthony Davis and everything else associated with that. I think we're coming out of the Women's World Cup matches, which are airing on FS1 this week. So if you're watching those, we'll be on right after those all week long on FS1. So a lot going on there, in addition to the fact that we hang out with you here for 3 hours every morning, Monday through Friday. And over the weekend, I think this might be our last big weekend of sports until we start college football, honestly, because it's. I know there are individual events that people might be interested in. You still got the British Open, which, by the way, it's going to be interesting now with golf not having the PGA Championship in August. Three of the four majors in golf are already complete. And then we have the British Open that'll take place in July, which is always fun. I think in the same way that the U.S. Open was cool this year that we had it in primetime, I always think it's fun, especially as early as we get up and everybody who's listening to us right now gets up. I always think it's fun to wake up and have golf already going because they're 6 hours ahead of us or so in Europe. So that will be a lot of fun. And obviously we can continue to follow the U.S. women who have advanced to the knockout stage of the Women's World Cup. They're one of 16 teams, which will now play a 16-team bracket. But first, they play Thursday against Sweden to figure out exactly where they'll be slotted in that. So there are individual games that will be fun to watch there. Five games potentially featuring the U.S. women. I just had to do my my count on my hand if they advance all the way to the title game. So still much to be seen there, and I'm sure people will really kind of buy in as that process plays itself out. But all that still to go, I guess four games still to go there. If the U.S. women win out and play in the title game, you'll have four more chances outside of this knockout stage to watch them. But I got a chance, and we've got the College World Series going on, and that's what I did over the weekend. Bobby Bones absolutely killing it in his show, which airs actually right next door to Dub. They got a brand new studio they're building and everything else. He's a huge Arkansas fan. So on Wednesday or Thursday, he texted me and said, hey, you want to go up to the College World Series for the day? And so he had a plane booked, and there were four of us. We just hopped in his flight, a couple of guys associated with his show and me. And I had never been to Omaha. And it's funny, my wife, we know Tim Corbin and his wife Maggie pretty well, and he's the Vanderbilt men's baseball coach. And I remember, you guys remember, we talked about this. I threw out the opening pitch at one of the Vanderbilt games, actually a Vanderbilt game against Arkansas, and that first pitch didn't go perfectly well. But the Corbins are awesome, and I know them pretty well at this point. They live in Nashville. And so my wife had been like, hey, I want to go up to Omaha and go watch this game if Vanderbilt advances into kind of the championship round. And, you know, there are eight teams that make the College World Series. And it's hard to get to Omaha, at least from Nashville where I am. I don't think there are that many direct flights. And one of the things that as I gotten older, I almost refuse to do is I am anti-change airplane guy. If you like, I say this to my wife all the time. If you want to go on vacation with me, you need to find somebody where we can get on a plane and get off there. I want to fly direct. Because if you have a connecting flight, I am 100% convinced that it's always things are going to go awry, and there's nothing worse than having a connecting flight when that goes awry, when there's you have zero interest in being in the town where you are trying to connect to. This happened to me a couple of years ago. One of my college roommates got engaged, was getting married, and I flew up. I was trying to go to Hartford, Connecticut, and you can't fly from Nashville to Hartford, Connecticut. So I had to go through Baltimore, Maryland. It's the only way, it's the fastest way to get to Hartford, Connecticut from Nashville. And I had to stop in Baltimore, Maryland. And when I stopped in Baltimore, Maryland, they shut down air traffic control. So I landed in Baltimore. I get on my plane. I'm about to take off to Hartford. We're already on the plane, about to taxi off. And they bring us back to the gate and say air traffic control has gotten shut down all over the Washington, D.C. area. They had an error in the computer glitch or whatever it was, and nobody can fly in the D.C. area. So all day I spend at the Baltimore airport. And I got up early in the morning. Like, I was traveling early in the morning on the day of the wedding. I get there. I spend all day at the Baltimore airport. They finally open up the airplane travel, and I get on at 9 o'clock at night and fly back to Nashville. So literally I spent 12 hours at the Baltimore airport, do absolutely nothing except walk around, can't go anywhere, can't leave, don't know when they're going to finally turn the flights back on, miss the wedding, turn around, fly back, and that was it. I'm like, I'm never connecting again. So you have to connect to go through Omaha. So Bobby Bones is enough of a baller now that he will fly private, so we had the private jet. So I don't know. That's my next step up. That's where I need to go, is I need to be able to get to the level of where I can go private jet occasionally to fly into things that I want to see or places that I want to go. And I'm not for like I have to come out to L.A. to do Lock It In for the week of July 4th. So I'll be out in L.A. then. If you're flying to a major city, I don't think it's necessary. Like, if you're going to New York, or you're going to L.A., you're going to Chicago, you're going to Houston, you're going somewhere where it's relatively easy to get to, then I think that's totally unnecessary. But it is pretty awesome to go to Omaha, Nebraska, and just fly right into the main airport at Omaha, hop out, be at the air, you know, be at the stadium 10 minutes later. So it was phenomenal. It was an incredible setup. It reminded me of a college football setting, the number of people who were out tailgating. That stadium is brand new. It seats 25,000 people. It was packed. Everybody was engaged. Arkansas fans are still trying to build themselves back up. Remember last year had that ball hit into foul territory that was dropped that would have won them the College World Series last year. And instead, I don't even remember who ended up winning it instead, but it should have been Arkansas. They had an easy play to make. And instead, they're back this year, and they ended up losing the game 1-0 to Florida State. But it was awesome. So I may try to get back up there if Vanderbilt advances, because we have a good relationship with the Corbins, and I'm obviously a Vanderbilt alum, as is my wife, so I would like to see Vanderbilt win the College World Series. They now will play against Mississippi State, who had an incredible walk-off win. I think they scored 3 or 4 runs in the bottom of the ninth to beat Auburn last night late. And so Mississippi State and Vanderbilt are going to play, and there are 8 teams. They've all played now, and we'll see exactly what ends up transpiring there. But how rich do you think you have to be to fly private? Like, that's a pretty badass move to be able to just hop in a jet. Hour and a half later, you're in Omaha. It's not that far of a trip. It's too far to me to drive, and I don't want to spend 12 hours trying to get to Omaha. But that was pretty awesome. So thanks to Bobby Bones for making it happen.
Yeah, you have to have a lot of expendable cash, right?
People, yeah, I think people think that flying private is more affordable than it is.
No, it's really expensive. I mean, there's athletes who have sob stories and tales about all the money they wasted
on private jets.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I mean, you have to be able to have a pretty big income in order to be able to do it. But, man, I think of all the things that you know, really rich people get to do, access to private air travel is by far number one on my list. Because anybody who has to, I travel a decent amount. And if you travel a lot, and I understand why if you run a company or you have access, you have to travel a lot, it is mind-numbingly frustrating to be trying to travel places, particularly if you're going a little bit outside the mainstream in terms of your destination. It is infuriating to get stuck in airports that you don't need to be in, and just air travel in general when you're trying to get work done or you're honestly trying to vacation anywhere. And Omaha is a great example of a city that it's just, there's not that many places you can go direct from Omaha. So I don't even know where I have to travel to first to be able to get to Omaha. Maybe Chicago. You might be able to go Chicago to Omaha. But that's the only downside I would say about the College World Series being in Omaha, is that it's hard to get there. And by the way, I didn't know this, but you land at the Omaha airport, and in order to get to the stadium, you have to drive through Iowa. Did anybody know that happens? Like, that there's that quirk of geography? I'm not an expert in the middle part of the country when it comes to geography. I had never been to Iowa before, and I had never been to Nebraska before. But in order to get from the Omaha airport to the Omaha College World Series stadium, you drive through Iowa. I would have bet a lot of money that were not the case. Anybody know that on the show?
No.
Any remote idea? I was stunned when I looked over and saw a Welcome to Iowa sign on the way to the College World Series after landing in Omaha. So that in and of itself is pretty awesome, and I would say it is worth putting on the bucket list, provided you can get to Omaha to be able to watch the College World Series, because they are all in. Arkansas people had traveled like crazy. I mean, there were 15,000 Arkansas fans that had made that trip up. And there were a ton of people standing in line for general admission, which I guess they do game by game to be able to sit out in the outfield and be able to go to those games. And obviously, as the teams lose, it gets a little bit easier to be able to get hotel rooms. But that place is set up awesomely. There are tons of hotels that are all walking distance to the stadium. So if you get in there, you don't really even need a car. There are lots of bars and restaurants you can walk around from. And be able to get into those stadium, that stadium setting. It was pretty awesome. And right now, if Vanderbilt goes, my wife and son are already booked to go up there. So my wife was pretty excited about it, but I'm glad I got to check it out. Anybody else on the show ever been to the College World Series?
Never have.
Doesn't sound like it. It's a good bucket list thing to put on your sports fandom list. And I do think there are a lot of people out there who say, I don't care about college baseball. And I certainly understand that argument. I don't really pay a ton of attention to college baseball during the regular season. But I always think when it gets to the College World Series, it's a lot of fun to follow because, first, there's not a ton of other sports going on. So you can watch, if you're a huge Major League Baseball fan, I understand you may be watching your favorite team play. But if you're just kind of a casual sports fan and you get to this point in the sports calendar, NBA's over, hockey's over, the U.S. Open has now completed itself. That for a good like 10 or 12 days to kind of buy in and watch the College World Series and see what's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm a big baseball fan. I think that would be cool. Also, for some reason, interests me is Durham, North Carolina, where the Bulls play.
Yeah.
I think it would be pretty cool to visit that stadium as well because of the movie and everything.
Yeah. Well, so a question for you guys as we get ready to go talk to Chris Mannix. How many of you watched the U.S. women play? I watched the U.S. women play. They won 3-0. Actually, I watched the first half, and they were already up 3-0. And then we went out to Father's Day, I guess like an early kind of brunch, dinner, whatever thing you want to call it. So I didn't watch the second half. I know they didn't score. It was on at the bar at the restaurant, so I was kind of keeping tabs on it. Did everybody watch on this show? Did you watch the U.S. women? I'm in. Did you watch Danny G?
So I had a late night. When I woke up, it was at the half. I watched the entire second half, and, of course, there was no action in the second half.
What was your late night? What did you do?
I had a date, and it just went long. So
long?
All right. There's a lot of jokes I can make there. I'm sure it didn't go that long. Is the one that I'll say. Let's go, Dub.
Went early. Went early in the morning.
Yes. Dub, did you watch?
I never miss a chance to watch our ladies play. Absolutely.
So, what did you think of Carly Lloyd's celebration by doing a golf clap? I actually thought that was pretty funny.
Oh, I thought it was hilarious. I mean, good for her. I want them, but next game against Sweden, it's all bets are off. I want them to dab. I want them to do. You see that new Hulu commercial they have with the women's national team about Hulu watches sports or whatever live sports? I think the whole team should just do that celebration.
Do we know what the bracket looks like? I mean, in other words. Is there a huge advantage? Are we aware of who the women will play? Is there an advantage on, obviously you always want to win, but I'm like the side of the bracket, is it a substantial advantage being the one versus the two? I mean, you have to win four games regardless, right? But sometimes you look at the bracket, and I'm not sure, a lot of times that first game maybe is a little bit easier if you get to play the two of another group. For people out there who don't know, the U.S. And the World Cup, and you feel like we need a refresher every few years, 32 teams advance to the World Cup. There are 8 different, quote-unquote, pods of 4 teams each. And in that pod of 4 teams each, 2 of the 4 teams will advance. So the U.S. and Sweden are both advancing from their pod. Thailand and Chile are not advancing, so they're already eliminated. So now the U.S. and Sweden play. Whoever wins comes out of the group as the number one. Whoever loses comes out as the number two. If you are the number one team advancing from your group, you play the number two team from another group. If you are the two, you play the one. And I believe those two teams are put on opposite sides of the 16-team bracket. So the only way they could play again would be if they both advance to the final. Now, there's always a little bit of uncertainty about who's going to be in which group, and sometimes there's gamesmanship over whether what side you want to be on, whether it's better to win your group or lose your group. You know, as you kind of look ahead to the round of 16, I'm not sure that it matters, but we need to look into that. That will be our expert. We will give you the breakdown of the Women's World Cup brackets as we get to the final segment of hour two here. But first, we're going to talk to Chris Mannix. But I want to see Danny G. Did you watch, or Eddie Garcia? Did you watch?
I did not watch.
Do you hate America?
No, I do not hate
but
America.
But I feel like if you didn't watch the U.S. women play, not only do you hate America, you're also sexist. So thanks for going ahead and telling on yourself, Eddie.
You're welcome.
Also, you don't have kids, so you weren't out for Father's Day like because you had to be out with your family.
Correct.
So you both hate America and you hate women. I'm glad that we've established that. And you're not a huge great American like everybody else on the show. And also, you are a misogynist. What about you, Roberto? Did you watch?
No.
Yeah.
If baseball's not on, I'm binge watching Breaking Bad right now because I never saw that show.
Oh, that's actually a good decision. But you know what it proves? That you're a misogynist and you hate America. all right, we're going to go to break, and we'll ask Chris Mannix whether he's a misogynist and he hates America or if he watched the women play. Also have him break down as the NBA insider for Sports Illustrated whether or not he likes the trade for Anthony Davis and whether the Lakers gave up too much, whether they got a good deal. We'll go to him for his expertise as well as find out the latest on salary cap.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Joined now by Chris Mannix at SI. Chris Mannix to break down the latest on the Anthony Davis trade. And let's bring in Chris. Chris, were you surprised about the price that the Lakers paid? What do you think of this?
No, I wasn't surprised by the price they paid because on the initial reporting, it looked like, you know, three first-round draft picks is high, but not exceedingly high. But then, as you learn more, the swap rights are what really get you. And this is what the Brooklyn Nets had to deal with for years in the aftermath of that deal with the Celtics. Those swap rights are just a killer. And when you're looking at, what is it, 2023 and 2025, the ability to swap picks, I mean, that could be substantial for the Pelicans. They try to turn the corner on that franchise. So, look, if I'm the Lakers, I still would have done it because, you know, you have to, you're on LeBron's timeline now, and you have to roll the dice on a deal like this. But the Pelicans can walk away from this deal thinking that they maximized the value for Anthony Davis.
Speak about the swaps again in 2023 and 2025, the two late round picks. Ideally, anytime you're having this situation, you want your pick to be as low as it possibly can. But theory, by that point, LeBron James's career is over, right? Probably. And so the Pelicans would be rooting for the Lakers to be awful then so they could take advantage of those bad picks.
Exactly. And look, it's not a sure thing. You know, when the Nets made the Celtics trade, they were aware that the 2016 pick or the later picks in the swaps could be problematic for them because of the age of the players. They just didn't anticipate that thing going south as quickly as it did in Brooklyn. The Lakers, their optimism is that even if LeBron is gone by that point, and who knows, I mean, he could be one of those guys that plays until he's 40, but even if LeBron is gone at that point, Davis is still going to be at the back end of his prime years. And if you have Anthony Davis there, you're going to be able to recruit, you know, another player to play alongside him. So their hope is that they're able to build that team out around Anthony Davis so they avoid that cliff that befell the Brooklyn Nets.
All right, so let's get into the nitty-gritty here of this trade because this is where I'm kind of fascinated by the detail work, and I know it's still a little bit to be determined. But initially when this trade came out, the first thought is, okay, the Lakers would have enough money left to be able to go get another max contract player and pair with Anthony Davis and LeBron James. It now appears that's not the case based on when this trade is taking place and how the money will work out. I know it's in the weeds, but I feel like this is a pretty important detail. How, to your understanding, do the dollars work out here?
Well, what it boils down to is that if the Lakers can convince the Pelicans to hold off on executing this trade until July 30th, they'll be at around $32 million in cap space, which is roughly max level for a new contract. If they don't, that number drops down to about 27. If the Pelicans insist on executing this deal on July 6th, the first day they can execute it, it drops down to 27. And for the life of me, I don't know what the Pelicans' motivation would be to help the Lakers out even further. As we said, they're now in the business of the Lakers losing. Now that they've made this deal, they want the Lakers to struggle as early and as often as possible. So I would expect David Griffin and the Pelicans to insist this deal gets done on July 6th. So without any other maneuverings, the Lakers are only at about $27 million in cap space. But you know what? I don't think max cap space should matter. I think if you're the Lakers, you now have a prime Anthony Davis and LeBron James, who is still an offensive force. Your combination, especially with the Warriors crumbling, your combination of Davis and LeBron is going to be right up there with any twosome in the NBA. Going to get another star I don't think is the best course of action. I think filling out the roster with the likes of, say, a J.J. Redick or Malcolm Brogdon or any of the other second or third tier free agents that make sense around your players, that's the best way to go. They went south last year, Clay, because they didn't get enough shooting around LeBron James. They have to go out this summer and find shooting to complement LeBron and Anthony Davis. They've got one guy in Kyle Kuzma that they were able to keep that fits that mold. They need to find two or three more.
All right, let's leave behind the Lakers for a minute and go into free agency, which officially is going to start in, what, like 15 days, almost exactly from now, a little over 2 weeks. When you look at the free agent marketplace, what are you hearing? Who's actually in play? Do you think Durant and Klay now stay with the Warriors? Do they sign max deals? Does Durant opt in for 1 year? Does he still potentially leave and sit out? Where are we looking there? What are you hearing about Kyrie? What other free agency? Kawhi? What is the expectation on your end as we move closer to this?
Well, I think, you know, Michael Thompson, the father of Klay Thompson, came out and said that Klay's definitely going to be with the Warriors. And the perception's always been, as long as Golden State didn't nickel and dime Klay Thompson, he was going to stay there. Now, the injury throws a bit of a wrench into it, but, man, it would be a bad look for Warriors ownership if, you know, this guy that's been part of three championships and five finals runs, if they'd nickel and dimed him after this injury. So I think Klay is there. I mean, I don't know if this changes the calculus on Durant all that much. You know, the sense I always got was that he was going to New York, and that still remains the case. The Knicks, I've been told, are not going to hesitate to give Durant a four-year offer. They're willing to pay 4 years to get 3 years of Kevin Durant. So I think that same offer is still going to be on the table. So I think Durant is still likely to wind up in New York with the Knicks. And Irving, I really think there's some clarity with Irving as well. I mean, I don't know for sure if it's the Nets, but I think for sure it's going to be one of those two New York teams. I think at this point it would take a miracle for Kyrie Irving to be back in Boston. I just don't see that happening. I think the Celtics are going to lose him in the offseason.
What do you think the Lakers, who do you think the Lakers were competing with to get Anthony Davis? You just mentioned the Celtics, so I want to go to there. Reports are that the Celtics were not willing to include Jason Tatum in any deal. In your mind, who were the Lakers bidding against? Did you hear of anybody else making an aggressive run that the Lakers had to outbid?
No, because this was done before the draft, because the Pelicans obviously wanted either that fourth overall pick or the right to trade that fourth overall pick. So there was kind of an accelerated timetable, and there really wasn't enough time for another team or teams to really think about Anthony Davis as a rental. And say what you want about Rich Paul, but he did a pretty good job of publicly scaring off everybody that might have been interested in taking Davis on with the belief that they could convince him to stay. Now, my understanding of Boston when it comes to Jason Tatum is that even though these didn't get down to specific deals, I think they would have included Tatum if it was just Tatum and like nothing else. I think they would have been willing to do a Tatum and nothing else deal or a Jaylen Brown-centric plus draft picks plus the whole, you know, the whole boatload of stuff that they're willing to offer. The bottom line, though, is it just never got that far with them. They couldn't roll the dice with all their young pieces without having any idea of what Kyrie Irving was going to do. If they had gotten from Kyrie Irving an indication that he would stay long-term if they got Anthony Davis, they would have dumped everything in. And they would have gotten him, too, because, you know, people are sick of hearing me and others say it, but if the Celtics want somebody, they can go get somebody because of how many pieces they have in their war chest. But it just didn't materialize with Kyrie. Kyrie seems very focused on leaving Boston. He seemed, whatever happened this past year, Clay, has soured Kyrie on the Celtics, on the organization, on leaving that city, and the Celtics couldn't roll the dice on AD.
We're talking to Chris Mannix at SI. Chris Mannix, what happens with Kawhi?
You know, I still think the Clippers are the leader here. And this is some interesting comments coming out of the Raptors in the aftermath. I mean, I think Fred VanVleet said some of the lines of, if he goes, you know, we'll just have to kick his ass next year. And I think there's a lot of uncertainty within the Raptors organization about what Kawhi's going to do. Now, he's one of those guys that you just can't fully read. And Kawhi could wake up on July 1st and say, you know, I think I'm going to do a short-term deal with the Toronto Raptors. But I think the more likely scenario remains that Kawhi goes to L.A. and signs a long-term deal with the Clippers. That's been part of the plan all along. And nothing Kawhi has said in the aftermath of winning that championship has given you any indication that course has changed.
So the Lakers became the favorite to win the NBA title. That's obviously in conjunction with the Durant and the Klay Thompson injuries. Should the Lakers be favored?
No. I mean, right now it's three players, and we have to see what Rob Pelinka does next. I mean, what we saw with the Raptors is a prime example of how you build a championship team. You get your star in Kawhi Leonard, you have your second star in Kyle Lowry, and then your roster needs to be filled out with smart, low-level moves. You have to draft Pascal Siakam with the 27th overall pick. You have to take Fred VanVleet off the free agent scrap heap after he goes undrafted and plug him into that hole. You have to make a savvy deal involving a Marc Gasol. There are just too many steps that the Lakers have to make for me to believe that they're ready to be a championship team next season. Right now, I look at the Houston Rockets. I mean, the Rockets were so bitterly disappointed in the way last season ended. They were at the point where they were looking to move on from Mike D'Antoni, even shaking up the roster. But if you're the Rockets now and you see the Warriors as a non-factor in the playoffs next year, you got to look at yourself and say, we've only been beaten by Golden State. We've still got, you know, two top 10 players, top 15 players in Harden and Chris Paul. We've got a group that has great chemistry playing together. We got to keep this group together and see if we can make another run. I think Houston, assuming that Toronto breaks up, has to be considered a co-favorite to win the whole thing. That's why the Rockets have to be happy that they didn't do anything too abruptly at the end of the season.
Do you hear any talk at all that Durant and Klay Thompson could come back to the Warriors and that both of them could be driven to try and get healthy to be back by the end of the season and be ready for the playoffs next year? That could be something to them. Do you hear any talk of that at all?
No, I think Klay will be back before the end of the season because history shows those ACL injuries, you can get into March and put him back on the floor. So I would think he could play before the end of the year, but I'd be shocked if Kevin Durant plays next season. I mean, that's a 9 to 12 month type of injury, and if he's just getting back into shape, you know, by April, there's no way you put him out there on the floor. That's why I think, in a way, New York is the best type of situation for him. If he goes to New York and nobody goes with him, they're going to be terrible again next year, which is amazing given what they've gone through over the last couple of decades, not much less the last few years. But there's no pressure to come back in New York. There's no pressure to come back in Golden State either because of what he did and what he tried to play through at the end of last year. But I just don't see, with an Achilles injury, Durant coming back to play at all.
Do you think Steph, Klay, and Draymond ever play together on the Warriors in the finals again?
In the finals, I'm skeptical. Only because I think one of the biggest decisions I think Golden State has to make this summer will be what to do with Draymond. Because if you're effectively punting on next year and saying we're not a championship-level team, we might not even be a second-round playoff team, then you have to evaluate what you do with Draymond coming up for an extension or a new contract in 2020. Draymond Green is the lifeblood of that team, and he is still an elite defensive player. But he's, I think, going to be 30 when that new contract starts, and he's been kind of a depreciating asset over the last few years. He is a great defender, but he's not really the defender what he was a couple of years ago. He is still a good playmaking offensive player who can give you triple-doubles, but his shooting has declined, and that generally is not something that gets better as a player gets older. So I'd be reluctant to give Draymond a max-level contract when his contract comes up. And if you're not going to do that, you have to at least explore the possibility of moving him and see if you can get pieces back in return that fit around Steph Curry and Klay Thompson in the long term. Those are going to be the two core guys, presumably, that you build around. I think this summer, you have to start thinking about finding the pieces that work next to them.
Outstanding stuff as always. Go follow Chris at SI Chris Mannix on Twitter. Read him at SI. Listen to him all over the place. That is Chris Mannix. When we come back, I made an error in breaking down the Women's World Cup. We will castigate me. We will correct me. You're not going to believe what it was. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. We are off and rolling here. Final segment of Hour 2. Big correction from me. Earlier in the show, I was trying to break down the Women's World Cup, and I said this. For people out there who don't know, the U.S. And the World Cup, and you feel like we need a refresher every few years, 32 teams advance to the World Cup. For people out there who don't know, yeah, there's actually 24 teams in the Women's World Cup. Did anybody else on the show know there were 24?
Negative for me.
Yeah,
negative.
I think a small percentage of our audience knew. I don't know why they only have 24. I guess the quality of women's soccer is not high enough to justify 32 teams like the men have 32. So there are only 24 teams. Now, I have also attempted to break down who the U.S. women will play. So my understanding is right now, whoever wins the – and I might end up destroying this, all right? This is my attempt to look at the bracket challenge. If the U.S. women beat Sweden on Thursday, they will play Spain in the round of 16. If they lose, they will likely play Germany in the round of 16. Dub, you were supposed to do research on that. Is that accurate?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
So from the research that I've done, yeah, you got the first part right. So we're Group F. The winner of Group F, if we beat Sweden, we will win Group F. We would play the runner-up of Group B. Now, right now, as it stands, Group B, Spain is currently in second. So if things hold as is, you would be correct. We would play Spain in the round of 16. However, if we've ended up losing to Sweden, the runner-up of Group F will play the runner-up of Group E. Now, as that stands currently, that would be Canada.
Is that true? Now, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, no, because, like you said, there's only six groups. So 6 times 2, if my math is correct, is 12. In the round of 16, there needs to be 16 teams. So there will be 4 third-place teams that will also advance to the knockout stage in the round of 16.
Well, I'm confused. So I
am too, and I just
right?
You got about half right.
Yeah, that's pretty good, I think, honestly. All right, second part of this, in addition to me clearing up that and making things more confusing, what percentage of this show would have known Gary Woodland if he were, like, sitting at the Chick-fil-A table next to you? You'd have been like, oh, hey, that's Gary Woodland. Dub, any way you know him?
I would know him. I'm kind of a golf I would definitely know.
Yeah, okay. Let's go ahead and fire Dub for ruining that entire segment. Is there any way that you would have known him, Danny G?
No. I'm a casual golf fan, more of a Tiger Woods fan. And obviously, once I looked him up and found out about him, I was like, oh, okay, maybe I've seen him in passing. But no, he's nobody we would have gambled on when we were talking about the odds.
He was 100-1. Yeah. All right. Eddie Garcia, would you have known him?
I've never even heard his name before.
Yeah, okay, thank you. And what about you, Roberto?
Yeah, he's on my top 100 board.
Yeah, okay. So I said as soon as he won that I didn't have any idea. And you would have thought that I was like, who's this Phil Mickelson guy? Like, golf guy, loser golf guy out there was so upset that I didn't know who Gary Woodland was. I looked into my, like, I don't pay a lot of attention to my mentions on a regular basis now. I'll check them every now and then. I looked in, and you would have thought I was like, who's this Phil Mickelson guy?
I saw some of the comments, and one guy said, you should be ashamed to be part of sports media.
Yeah, I should be ashamed to be in sports media because I don't know who Gary freaking Woodland is? I mean, the thing about me is there are other people out there who will try to fool you and pretend that they know everything about everything that goes on in the world of sports. I just tell you what I know, and this is a good lesson in life. Saying I don't know is valuable, right? If you have the confidence just be like, I don't know, then people will respect you more when you actually have an opinion on something because they'll be like, oh, this is something this guy does know. I have no idea who Gary Woodland is. I wouldn't have recognized him if he were sitting next to me at Chick-fil-A. If he walked into my studio right now, I'd be like, who's this strange dude who's walking into the studio? Congratulations to him for winning. No idea who he is. We're going to be joined by Alex Marvez. We'll ask him whether he watched any of the U.S. Open, any of the Women's World Cup. We'll dive into all that and more up next, including the latest Baker Mayfield controversy in the NFL. All that and more. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Let's bring in Alex Marvez at Alex Marvez on Twitter. And I understand you have some thoughts on Tyreek Hill or some updates potentially in that situation, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, and it's interesting because, Clay, you know, obviously such a brouhaha in the media when, you know, news came out about Tyreek Hill being suspended and the thought that, you know, he had potentially broken his son's arm as part of a disciplinary action against him. Well, WHB in Kansas City, they're reporting that no, neither Tyreek Hill nor the child's mother, Cristal Espinal, broke the child's arm. This was essentially just an accident that happens. And look, they're kids. I get it. Now, that being said, there's still disciplinary issues about the way that Tyreek Hill disciplined his son, and, you know, that included spankings and things like that. That's another story for another day, right? But in this case, and Andy Reid admitted that he screwed up by saying the police had restarted an investigation when they didn't restart an investigation. There was nothing really new going on with all of this. So essentially, you know, bad information comes out. The Kansas City Star had talked about this, and they never went back and corrected their reporting. So an image has been put out there on Tyreek Hill. And Clay, again, I'm not justifying the way that the man is dealing with his child or his fiance or anything like that, but I think it's important, since we have discussed this story so frequently on my visits here, you know, on Outkick to Coverage, that we mention this with Tyreek Hill. And then now what this means is essentially, I would imagine, a de facto NFL suspension, maybe a couple of games, and then he'll be back with the Kansas City Chiefs. That's one of the reasons the Chiefs didn't cut ties with Tyreek Hill, because he is one heck of a football player, and this does appear to be a navigable situation for them. So, ultimately, I would imagine that sooner than later, we're going to hear word from the NFL as to any discipline against Tyreek Hill. But I just wanted to mention this to our listeners, because we have discussed this situation, you know, about his son, and explain, no, his son did not suffer a broken arm, according to the investigators, at the hands of Tyreek Hill or his fiance.
This is according to a report, though.
This is according to WHB, and apparently it has been followed up by multiple media reports, and I can read you the quote here from the investigation. The investigation into the couple's parenting accelerated when Overland Park police checked on the boy in March and found welts and bruises on his body. Both Hill and Espinal have admitted to investigators that they spanked the three-year-old with their hands and a belt, but prosecutors can't determine for sure which parent or if both went too far. In April, Johnson County District Attorney Steve Howe held a press conference to announce criminal charges wouldn't be brought against Hill or Espinal, but he stated he believed the crime was committed against the boy, and it was believed the crime was about the broken arm. It was not. Howe's team has halted working on the case, as they still can't bring charges for bruising and harming the boy, end quote.
So I guess what I'm saying is, where's their source coming from? Because there's been so much inaccurate reporting surrounding this story that that's not a direct quote from somebody. That's another report that may or may not be true.
Well, Clay, I don't know what to tell you about all of this, because, again, I don't know what police have done a piss-poor job, obviously, in trying to explain what's going on with Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, because the DA, what I remember the DA saying was that he believed a crime was committed, but he wasn't sure who committed the crime, so they couldn't bring any charges. And then what happened, for everybody out there who's been trying to follow this case, and then what happened, so far as I remember, was a report, which I think was confirmed by Andy Reid, and now we're saying that Andy Reid misspoke, but a report that they had reopened the investigation after the audio came out that had been secretly recorded by the fiance, basically discussing what exactly happened with the son, and it sounded bad for Tyreek Hill, but it was an audio clip, and you didn't really know everything about that, but the expectation had been that reopened the investigation. And now this report is saying the kid's broken arm wasn't the crime? Like, it doesn't really –
right.
I guess what I'm saying
is that
the reporting doesn't tie together to me.
Well, 810WHB, and it's on their website, h10whb.com, says that according to multiple sources – close to the investigation, investigators quickly agreed with the medical staff that the broken bone was the result of a typical accident involving a rambunctious toddler, consistent with reaching out to brace for a fall.
Right. But so what's the crime?
It would be child abuse in terms of the the way that they were disciplining the
child. And they're just not sure who was abusing the child, basically.
Right, and listen, and essentially, and if that is, and you get into that argument as well, as far as like what is discipline, right? But when you talk about welts and things like this, yeah, I mean, in fact, that they took the child away from Tyreek Hill and his fiance will tell you that they thought that things were excessive, but they're not going to be able to bring charges on this.
What
I mean,
did Adrian Peterson? Like, what did Adrian Peterson get? Six games.
Adrian Peterson. Well, and you think about it as well because of the timing of it. I mean, he essentially missed a season. Because he was frozen, remember?
Yes.
On the commissioner's secret exempt double probation list.
Yeah, right.
So they stashed him away, and then came the criminal proceedings where they actually had enough information with a child who was old enough at 5 years old to speak about what had happened.
Yeah.
As opposed to what happened here with a 3-year-old that you just can't go.
Well, we still don't even know what the rules seem to be because somehow Kareem Hunt got 8 games. Right. Even though you're supposed, and also he was on the commissioner's non, whatever that thing is, like, so he missed the rest of the season, and now he's supposed to serve an 8-game suspension, so he's ultimately going to end up missing like 14 games or something, right?
Yeah, about 18 or so. Yeah, you're right. And the paychecks that come with it, and that's part of the problem with the NFL's personal conduct policy is that nobody really knows what constitutes this, you know, a punishment for these sorts of things. I mean, you know, we have Zeke Elliott and his situation, never charged, never brought to court, anything like that, but the NFL determined that he had abused an ex-girlfriend, thus a 6-game suspension by talking to her and looking at photos. I mean, why not 8 games? Why not 4 games? We don't know. You know, this is part of the league and the mysterious ways in which they work. So that's why with Tyreek Hill, we just don't know where this goes. And we can't cite past precedent because, Clay, it's clear the NFL doesn't use past precedent, it seems, when deciding these sorts of things, i.e. Kareem Hunt and the 8-game suspension.
Here's what I will say. I will be stunned if he doesn't miss at least 6 games because I think the last thing that Roger Goodell is going to do is underpunish given how much attention this story got.
Sure, so, six games sounds about right. Clay, I agree with you. And I think with the attention that the story's gotten, you have to have some sort of strong stance. And under the personal conduct policy, I mean, he can give him 6 games.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he'll listen, he'll can appeal, and maybe the arbitrator, you know, has sympathy upon him and says, listen, you weren't charged with anything, you're only doing 4 games, but let's be honest here. It's probably going to be 6 games, and the Kansas City Chiefs need to plan accordingly. And they have decisions to make as well, Clay.
And then the next step, the next step is going to be, what is the reaction to Tyreek Hill being signed to a big deal contract? Because a lot of people are going to say, it's not for Tyreek Hill, it's not this one allegation standing alone. It's the fact that this same woman was choked and beaten when she was pregnant with the same kid. So you don't get the benefit of the doubt in some way where others might receive the benefit of the doubt, given his past history and the fact that he was kicked out of Oklahoma State and everything surrounding him. This also
the threats, the audio threat of him threatening the woman that he beat up in college and struck. Yeah, that's pretty damning. And the fact that there's been a child who's been abused. I mean, that's you know, we agree with that part, right? I mean, that essentially, you know, the welts and things like that from disciplining your child. I mean, are there potential anger management issues with Tyreek Hill? I mean, yes, it does appear that way. Is he doing anything right now? And this we don't know. Is he undergoing counseling? Is he doing the sorts of things to try to get these things straightened out in his life so it never happens again? You know, I'm not, and again, that doesn't give him a free pass, but it makes it a lot more palpable for the Kansas City Chiefs to bring him back. And the other thing, too, local outrage, fan outrage, sponsorship outrage. Are we going to get any of that in Kansas City, or is because Tyreek Hill such a really good football player that, yeah, he's a dirtbag, but he's our dirtbag and he helps us win games?
I think it's the latter. I mean, I think fans have shown themselves to be totally amoral when it comes to local teams winning games. They will defend anything their local team does. I think that that they'll defend Tyreek Hill, particularly because I think there are a lot of people out there who are Kansas City Chiefs fans that feel like we gave away Kareem Hunt basically for nothing, right? I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it didn't seem to me like, I could be wrong, but when John Dorsey and the Cleveland Browns pick up Kareem Hunt, it didn't seem like there was that much outrage. And I think that's because people watched the video and they said, look, I'm not saying I want to necessarily believe this guy is a paragon of virtue and he should be held up as a role model for my kids. But that video that came out of Kareem Hunt and the way he behaved in the hotel and the kicking and the shoving and things like that, I think most people said, you know what, I'm not – this guy deserves to be able to play football. He's not perfect. He's obviously made a mistake here. But it's not egregious in the same way that the Ray Rice knocking out his fiance video was. And frankly, it's not egregious in the same way. If there had been video of Tyreek Hill choking and punching his pregnant girlfriend back when he was in college, I doubt that he ever would have gotten drafted into the NFL. Now, maybe I'm wrong, because there's certainly video of Joe Mixon knocking out that girl in the Oklahoma when he was at Oklahoma, and he still got drafted in the second round by the Cincinnati Bengals. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe a team would have still drafted Tyreek Hill if he choked and punched his pregnant girlfriend and that was on video. But I tend to think that most of the time video changes things if it's an egregious wrong in video. And as long as Tyreek Hill is just on audio, he's probably going to get to come back maybe with a 6 or 8 game suspension.
Yep, and the other thing is, too, Clay, and this is where the Kansas City Chiefs have to make some decisions, because bringing someone like this back in your locker room, I mean, if this is one of your teammates, it's a little uncomfortable, right? I mean, knowing that you're lining up next to a guy who is, you know, essentially, you know, disciplined their kids so far that they have to be taken away by protective services, and by someone who's threatened, you know, their fiancé and been caught on audio doing just that. I mean, as an organization, do you put your other Kansas City Chiefs players through the same thing? Because, well, you know, even if they may be at least accepting of this, a lot of them have girlfriends, a lot of them have wives, a lot of them have families themselves, and do they want to be associated with someone like this, who, again, is a fantastic football player, but there is a human element that's involved in this. And this is when the Chiefs take a big picture step back, right? I mean, that's something they have to ask themselves as an organization. And they may say, we're committed to Tyreek Hill as a human being, right? Where okay, we're going to help see him through this, and we're going to try to make sure at the end of the day, when Tyreek Hill no longer plays for the Kansas City Chiefs, that he's a better human being. You know, what happened essentially, and to a different extent, but with Michael Vick, right, in the Philadelphia Eagles? And you remember how the NFL and everyone got involved in Michael Vick and trying to say that we're going to successfully rehabilitate Michael Vick's image after he killed all those dogs, and they did. Right? And now Michael Vick is a prominent broadcaster at Fox and has generally gained mainstream acceptance. I mean, people know that he did some terrible things in his past, but it worked. Can the Kansas City Chiefs orchestrate this type of, you know, statement as well and make this type of initiative? Just something to look out for here, Clay, because there's so many different levels to all of this with Tyreek Hill. But in the long run, I totally agree with you. Probably a 6-game suspension, and I'll probably be back on the field for the Chiefs once again.
Matt, from a Machiavellian perspective, the impact is going to be that the Chiefs are going to sign him to a longer-term contract for a lot less money.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
you're
right. He may have been entitled to $100 million. Let's just say he was entitled to $100 million on the open market. He might be worth $50 million on the open market now. And as a result, the Chiefs are going to benefit because they're going to be able to spend money on other guys and not have to spend as much money on Tyreek Hill as he might otherwise have been entitled to. Because I think, in addition to the Chiefs, I think that there's a bunch of teams that would take him off their board. They would just say, you know what, it's one thing if the Chiefs keep him because he's already in Kansas City. They already have a relationship with him. But I, meaning I as an owner, cannot justify bringing this guy into my community. Given his background, it's going to be a backlash if we pay him $75 or $80 million guaranteed, whereas I think the Chiefs are more likely to be able to do it than other teams, but they'll be able to do it for a lot less money. All right, speaking of money, Baker Mayfield decided to weigh in on Duke Johnson, I believe it was, saying that he was underpaid and he wanted to get a better gig and everything else, and it seems that there was a little bit of a flare-up. Now, to me, this is evidence of Baker Mayfield just making himself too much of a story, right? He is going to be a focal point of the NFL coverage no matter what. He doesn't need to work to interject himself into stories, and this seems to have blown up a little bit on him.
Well, it has, although I'll tell you this, I think Chiefs management loves it, and I think there are probably some players who love it.
Yeah.
You know, just like when you got 88 other guys or 89 other guys, it'd be 88 actually, with not counting Duke Johnson and not counting Baker Mayfield, you're going to ask 88 guys, and of course, maybe 50 of them are relevant to the conversation because they're the ones that will make the final roster. You're going to ask them and you're going to get a wide swath of opinions. You're going to get some folks who say, you never cross that line of getting involved in another player's contract situation. And that's what Baker Mayfield did. The stock answer is to just say, hey, listen, we love Duke, him being here, and we hope it works out. We hope he's a member of the Browns, and we hope he's got his contract situation resolved. But that's above my pay grade, right? I mean, that's essentially how most people would answer that. Well, Baker Mayfield gave an honest answer, which is, if you're not here to help this team and you don't want to be here, well, okay, see you later. right? Now, it's not that easy for Duke Johnson because he cannot get his release. He's asked for it. Didn't happen. He's asked to get traded. Hasn't happened. And one can understand from the Browns' standpoint why they're keeping him. Kareem Hunt isn't going to be back for 8 games. And let's say Kareem has another misstep. There's no guarantees he doesn't. So at that point, you want to make sure you've got a good running back playing behind Nick Chubb. And maybe you haven't gotten a trade offer commensurate to what it would be worth for you to trade a running back making a meager $1.6 million under the salary cap, who's a pretty good player. So, you know, Duke Johnson fires his shot across the bow that he doesn't want to be there. Baker Mayfield fires back at him. You know, these are the types of things that Baker's eventually going to learn in time. Unless you're willing to deal with all of the drama and headaches that come with saying something, that even if you feel it, well, these things may flare up. And it's something that Freddie Kitchens as well needs to talk about, you know, in terms of the Browns head coach. He has leaned on players. Don't talk about Super Bowls. Don't talk about dynasties. We haven't even won a division. We haven't even had a winning record in 10 years, okay? But then you see Odell Beckham Jr., you know, going against that and telling GQ that we're trying to build a Patriots-like dynasty and how he sees comparisons between Baker Mayfield, he's the next Brett Favre. I mean, you know, Freddie Kitchens has to establish himself as a head coach, and his words have to have some gravitas. So we'll see how this plays out in the future as others say things to the media that cause controversy. But honestly, Clay, in the big picture of things, I think this is one of those middle of June off-season stories that we talk about now, just like Tom Brady skipping OTAs last year, and then it ends up in the long run like, this really didn't matter in the grand scheme of things.
Anything else quickly that's out there that fans should pay attention to this week coming up?
It's quiet, man. It's off-season right now, Clay, to be honest with you. Things are pretty quiet. I mean, we're just looking at some disciplinary issues. And listen, teams also, you know, on the clock as far as getting franchise player signed. And by the way, the Houston Texans, nice GM search. Way to work.
Yeah.
What a disaster.
Yeah, we could have dove into that as well. We'll talk to you next week. It's Alex Marvez. Go follow him on Twitter. We come back, we'll jump back into the LeBron move that got Anthony Davis to the Lakers. We'll talk about the U.S. women advancing to the round of 16. Also, Gary Woodland's big championship in the U.S. Open. All that coming. Final segment, Outkick the Coverage on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Ice Cube bringing us back, just turned 50 on Saturday, probably was celebrating the Lakers trade. Big L.A. sports fan like he is. Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. As we finish off the Monday edition of the show, hope all of you guys have had fantastic Father's Day weekends and you're ready for the start of the week. As you wake up across the West Coast, I would say the big story, first of all, Gary Woodland gets the win in the U.S. Open, and the U.S. women have advanced into the knockout stage of the Women's World Cup, even though they have a game on Thursday. But I have said from the get-go that the Lakers had to make one decision, and evidently they have made it. I said they have to decide whether they were going to roll with LeBron James, in which case they need to win right now because he's going to turn 35 years old. They have him under contract for 3 years. Or they needed to trade LeBron James and build on the young talent that they had surrounded him with, because it was clear that the plan they were working with now, which was mix LeBron James primarily with young players and add a few veterans, was in the first year an unmitigated disaster. So once they made the decision that they needed to go out and try to win now, the number of options they had were slim. Because I think the guys who were willing to come to play for the Lakers and were healthy was a small number. Durant's not going to come, and he's got to sit out for a year, which would mean you wouldn't be able to contend for a championship till LeBron's 36. You're basically mailing it in for another year. Same thing true of Klay Thompson, whose dad was a former Lakers star, and you could have maybe held out hope for him, but when he tore his ACL in Game 6, that option was out. Kawhi Leonard seems to have no interest in coming to play for the Lakers. In fact, he may well come to the same building if he decides to leave the Raptors and play for the Clippers. Kyrie Irving already has said, I don't want to be on the LeBron James train because I know he's a lot older than me and I don't want the team to be left a mess when he leaves. So basically, Kyrie Irving would be signing up for the situation that he demanded to get out of in Cleveland. And so, as a result, did Jimmy Butler or Kemba Walker or any of those guys, D'Angelo Russell, any of those guys make a difference that can put LeBron James and the Lakers back into a championship caliber? No, which leaves you with only one option. So you have to make – you have two roads diverge, right, to go all Robert Frost on you. The one side you can take LeBron James and say, we're going to trade you and we're going to go with the young team. The Lakers rejected that option. Once they decide we're going all in with LeBron James, the only player available that could make a difference in terms of making the Lakers potentially a championship caliber team was Anthony Davis. Once you make that decision, then basically the Pelicans own you. You have to decide, we'll give basically everything in order to be able to get Anthony Davis. And that's what the Lakers did. Now, to their credit, they got to keep Kyle Kuzma, but they give up three okay players. They give up a number four overall pick, which we'll see what the Pelicans are able to do with. And they give up potentially a couple of draft picks that could, depending on how things go with LeBron James, end up decent draft picks if the Lakers are not very good. And in exchange, they get Anthony Davis. And they get Anthony Davis with the ability now not to sign anybody else to a major contract. So to me, the only reason we're remotely talking about the Lakers as having a chance at the championship is because of the injuries to Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson. So that's where we are. The Lakers are swinging for the fences. They're trying to win right now, which is what I think you have to do with a 35-year-old LeBron James, and they have finally made a choice. They are all in on LeBron James and a chance to win a championship right now. Will it work? I have no idea, but I tend to think once you made the decision to go all in on LeBron James, you had no other options, and so the Lakers have made themselves relevant, which is certainly an improvement over where they were, which was a laughingstock. So we still have our offer out for Jeannie Buss to come on the show. She continues to not respond, correct, Danny G?
Yeah, no word back from her yet.
No word back at all. But the answer, we've been wondering what's going to be the path. Well, they went all in on LeBron James. We'll see if it's a good move or a bad move. Lots of time to decide, but it didn't seem like the free agency route was possibility for the Lakers. Thanks for hanging with us. Belated Happy Father's Day for everybody.